My name is Professor Andrew Beckerman Rodeau. I'm a full-time law professor at Suffolk University Law School in Boston, and I'm also co-director of the Intellectual Property Law Program at Suffolk University. What I want to talk about today is a brief overview of the area of intellectual property law. At its most basic level, intellectual property law deals with assigning property rights or protection for products of the mind. And that can be a new invention, a new song, a new work of art, a painting, a sculpture, a new book, a poem, a screenplay. Almost anything that comes from your mind is intellectual property. And some types of intellectual property have traditionally been protected by a variety of areas of law. One type of intellectual property, inventions, includes new machines, new pharmaceuticals, new genetically modified plants or animals, new methods of doing business. And these can all be protected by an area of law called patent law. And if patent protection is acquired for one of these inventions, the inventor gets 20 years of exclusive property rights for the invention in return for disclosing the invention to the public. The underlying idea in this area of law is that you enrich the public domain with inventions and other information and ideas, and in return, you are given a patent which insulates you from competition for the period of the patent. Essentially, the idea is that you give people an economic incentive to create, and the public ultimately gets the benefit. When the patent runs out, the information covered by the patent enters the public domain, and it's free for anyone to use. Artistic or creative works, which could include books or movies, artwork, paintings, sculptures, all those types of things are protected by copyright law, which essentially prevents others from copying your work. And the length of time the protection lasts varies, but the typical term is the author's life plus 70 years. Trademarks are another very important type of intellectual property. And we all are familiar with trademarks, you know, such as Coke for soda, Dell computers, IBM computers, McDonald's for fast food, Pepsi for soda, Tylenol, Crest toothpaste, Colgate toothpaste. There are just many, many trademarks that we're inundated with throughout our life. And the value of trademarks are that they create a mental association in the minds of a consumer, and they provide a shorthand so that when you're looking for a product, if you are happy with the product you used last time, you can identify it again wherever you go to shop by the same trademark. So if you like Crest toothpaste, every time you go to the store, you immediately recognize the trademark on the shelf among all the other brands of toothpaste, and it's a quick and easy way to get the same product that you had last time. The trademarks are a complex area of law in that, first of all, the property rights that are protected are the mental association between the trademark and a particular product that's created in a consumer's mind. And they're also protected by federal law if they're registered pursuant to the federal law. They also can be protected by state law if they're registered with a particular state, if there's a relevant statute. And even if they're not registered at the state or federal level, there's something called common law protection. Your mere use of the trademark in such a way that consumers associated with your product create property rights that exist. The areas of law that I just briefly discussed, patent, copyright law, and trademark law, are the major traditional areas of intellectual property law. However, there are also some additional areas which include, for example, trade secrets law. And trade secrets law really deals with confidential information. If I'm in business and I have information which I use that gives me a competitive advantage over my competitors because they're not aware of the information and I keep that information secret, I'm entitled to trade secret protection for that information. And so if someone acquires that information from me improperly, for example, an employee steals it and gives it to a competitor, I'm entitled to a cause of action. One common type of trade secret that's often used in the United States are manufacturing processes. If I make a generic product by a unique method, it may be impossible to ascertain the method by looking at the finished product. And so companies will maintain that process inside their factory in secret so that competitors cannot ascertain their process. The advantage of a trade secret is that, unlike a patent, trade secrets rights, it lasts forever, provided you maintain them in secret and your competitors are not aware of the trade secret. Another area of intellectual property which has grown significantly in the last two decades is something called the right of publicity. And that gives celebrities such as actors, sports figures, or anyone else in the public eye a right to control how their picture, their likeness, or their name is used in commerce. So if you want to associate a particular sports star with a sneaker brand because you think it'll enhance sales, you can only do that if the sports star agrees. And if you do that without his permission or her permission, then you violate that person's right of publicity, which is, you know, in some ways more the newest area of intellectual property which has grown up in the last two decades or so. Overall, the area of intellectual property law is a fascinating area to go into because it's grown in importance today as the U.S. has moved from increasingly from a economy that produces technology and ideas and innovation away from just producing durable goods based on manufacturing. In fact, many large companies in the U.S. today own more intellectual property assets than tangible assets. By tangible assets, I mean, you know, physical assets like land and buildings, etc., at least based on the total dollar value of those assets. Additionally, the U.S. Supreme Court, which only hears a very limited number of cases appealed to it every year because they have the discretion to decide which cases they hear. There's very few cases they have to take. Traditionally, they heard very few IP cases. But over the last few years, they've been hearing a significant number, often one, two, or three intellectual property cases per year. And I think some of the reason for that is that the importance of intellectual property has grown tremendously, and the Supreme Court sees the need to make sure that the law is such that it enhances the innovation, which benefits the society and our country overall. To learn more about intellectual property law, I invite you to look into the intellectual property law program, which is called our intellectual property concentration at Suffolk University Law School in Boston. You can get more information from the admissions office, or you can simply go online at www.law.suffolk.edu, and under academic programs, you will find detailed information about the intellectual property law concentration. Additionally, you can also find a significant amount of information about intellectual property law generally on my own website, which is at lawprofessor.org. That's lawprofessor, one word, .org, O-R-G. And I also invite you to contact me via email if you have any questions about intellectual property law, and you can access my email on my website, again, at lawprofessor.org. Thank you.